All right, good morning again, class. I'm Captain Bill Lauro, and you're not. But we're going to move on to therapeutic exercise, range of motion. We're going to talk a range of motion, ROM. ROM. I don't know of ever working with a patient that I didn't do some component of ROM with them, range of motion. Just even based on the evaluation. We do evaluations, we do assessment screenings, we're going to do range of motion assessments. Range of motion is an integral, important part of every therapeutic exercise program. I will tell you, there's folks with full range of motion, and we still have to consider the range of motion, because if you don't address it or consider it, sometimes they could lose it. All right, range of motion is huge, and it's very early on the ball. It's very low on the Baylor model, so you're going to see it almost all the time. Check this gal out. That's some range of motion. So we're going to teach you about components of range of motion, and once again, the take-home points. We know about that process? Okay. So there's some TLOs. Don't memorize those because they just confuse you. Okay. Learning steps. Okay. Take-home messages. Effects of immobilization. Would one say that too much immobilization is bad? Do you guys agree that too much immobilization is bad? BAD. Are you sure you need me? You don't need me. Identify general purposes and contraindications and precautions for range of motion. We need to move people. There's a purpose to move people and their joints and their bodies. But we can also do too much, so there's contraindications or reasons why we wouldn't want to do it. But a precaution is not a contraindication. Contraindications, BAD, we don't do it. Precautions, we proceed with caution. We can do it, but we have to consider certain elements, right? So don't confuse precautions with contraindications. All right, there's more learning steps, and we're going to touch upon all these without you guys having to memorize them. All right, look where we're at. Baylor model. You think you're going to see this again? Okay. I feel like the ringside gal. Okay, look. All right, you will see it again. I hang it up in every clinic that I go to. I had a really nice clinic at 5th Special Forces. I had all these great, cool, high-speed posters all over the place. And you think the Baylor model was hung up? You know it was, okay? So motion's early. So motion terminology, normal range of motion, joint motion that lies within the average normal joint's limits of motion for any particular joint. Now, what's normal for Mr. Manygoats and what's normal for me may be very different, okay? For his shoulder range of motion, he may be able to get to maybe 165 degrees. No pain, no problem, and that's just the way his arms are, okay? I might be able to get to 180. So it's pain-free, it's normal, and it's just what you should be doing. So you're going to see textbook ranges. Did you guys do any range of motion yet? Any numbers? So normal range of motion for shoulder flexion is from 0 to 180 degrees, okay? That's textbook. But maybe someone can only do 165 on this side, and that's their hurt arm, and they can do 165 on the unhurt arm, that's normal. It might be painful, which isn't normal, but it's normal motion. How about John McCain? Do you think he has normal range of motion in the shoulders? No. You know why, though, don't you? Yeah, he spent several years in prisoner war camps, and they used to hang him upside down by his shoulders and basically destroyed his shoulders. So when he waves like this, it's not so funny. It's just that he was great, you know, did great things for our country. So just keep that in mind. He's a great American. I'm not telling you who to vote for. There's not political inferences, but, you know, you see that, and it's like, man, why is he scratching his head like that? It's because they hung him upside down and put his head in between his legs and broke his shoulder so many times that they don't work so great now. So he could have benefited from some range of motion in, you know, there's prisoner of war camps. So functional range of motion. You could have very functional range of motion. It might not be normal. Okay? So John McCain has functional range of motion. He gets done what he needs to do. Is it normal? Can he bring his arms all the way up here and scratch the back of his head? No. But he can do what he needs to do with the range of motion that's given him. That's why I talk about John McCain. That's a good example of functional range of motion. All right? Amount of motion required for one to do the ability to perform functional activities. Now, hypomobility and Hypo is always not enough or too little. Hyper is too much. You could have hypomobility. That's not always good. You could have hypermobility, and that's not always good. Or you could have both. It's not that you have both, but you could be hypomobile and still do okay. You could be hypermobile and still do okay. A good example is like a lot of folks that are really strong, they have hypomobility, like their chest might be really strong, but they're kind of muscle bound. They're not moving as much, so they're strong, but their motion's limited. Whereas maybe a gymnast that has hypomobility, she can really do a lot of neat things with her legs and her arms, but she's not as strong, the likelihood of her dislocating joints. So oftentimes what you lose in strength, your makeup in motion, okay? So it's not so bad, but just kind of understand that hypo and hyper, not enough, too much. Terms used to describe abnormal range of motion. And both of these conditions may contribute to injury. Okay, so with hypomobility, we get things like contractures and adaptive shortening. Whereas hypermobility, we might get excessive motion and not stable, instability. Someone that has a degree of hypermobility in their shoulder, and that's just the way they were born, they're probably more susceptible to shoulder dislocations. Okay, someone that has hypomobility, they're more susceptible after they get hurt. We might have to do more range of motion with them because they're more susceptible for contractures or adhesions around that joint. So there's that normal part. All right, hypomobility factors. Prolonged immobilization. Why do we become unmobile or hypomobile? We could have a lot of immobilization. We could not move or have a sedentary lifestyle. You might have some postural malalignment and muscle imbalances. Weakness could hurt it. Maybe you have an inflammatory response after trauma, or believe it or not, and sadly so, there are some congenital or acquired deformities that will affect not having enough motion. Let me think if I can think of one. There's a condition called ankylosing spondylitis. Your vertebrae start to fuse over time. If you look at the x-ray, it looks like bamboo. And over time, someone's thoracic spine will start to fuse, and then we really want to kind of teach them to be a straight-up human as opposed to hunched over like this, because if it progresses enough, they lose the capacity to straighten up, okay? But that's kind of it's not congenital, but it's acquired deformity, and they lose almost all the motion in their back. Ankylosing spondylosis. I'd only use that you don't have to remember that term, but you could say it at a party to sound really cool, okay? Yes, please. You know what? We combat it by trying to give them the most right posture. Because over time, if you have that acquired deformity, it's going to eventually fuse anyway. So you want them to fuse in a more functional posture as opposed to fusing like this. You know, a lot of times you see folks that have that type of posture that they can't fix. It's because they have an acquired deformity. So immobilization effects. Check this out. Muscle atrophy and weakness occurs very rapidly. All right. Within 6 weeks, this is just the quadriceps, you can get a 30 to 40% strength loss, a 20 to 30% cross-sectional area decrease of your muscle fibers, and a 10 to 20% change in thigh circumference. Anybody that's had a knee surgery, they see this very quickly. Their quadriceps will deflate very quickly. Okay? Anybody have a cast on before? You immobilize the shoulder, you immobilize the elbow, you take that cast off, and you look like Pete Sampras and Andy Roddick. No, Andy Roddick's getting pretty jacked. So, tendon ligament strength. You will see decreased size and number in the collagen fibers. What you have to understand is immobilization can have a lot of deleterious or poor effects on your body and its tissues, okay? This is not good. Disorganization of tissue, that's counter to Wolff's Law, right? If you don't move and you're immobilized and you're healing, then you're going to get all jacked up fibers, right? We want fibers that are consistent with the way that our muscles, tendons, and ligaments heal and move. All right, you guys are fighting a good fight. I'm not that good. I must have motivated you somehow. Fear motivates. So cartilage degeneration. Cartilage softens and fragments. Believe it or not, over 4 weeks you have the potential for irreversible damage. And this is a shame, but oftentimes, folks will get a surgery, not do rehab, and then their cartilage will degrade. And once that happens, it's not really fixable. Bone changes, you can see osteoporosis, increase in bone mass density from 1 year of training are gone in 3 months. Wow. Wow. So if you're immobilized for 3 months, all that good work that you did at Jimmy Broadd, could be gone in 3 months. Loss occurs rapidly in the first 6 weeks. Weight-bearing bones affected the most. That's why women with osteoporosis, we oftentimes get them on weight-bearing therapeutic exercise programs. Like, that would not be the person I'd want to do a lot of aquatic exercise. If they're able to do like a walking program, that would be better. Okay? To stave off some of the effects of osteoporosis. And changes in bone mass density may be irreversible too. Bummer. Cardiovascular deficiency, when you're immobilized, VO2 max goes down very quickly, but not that quick. You don't fall off the shelf too fast, all right? But I'll tell you, VO2 max, you have better like memorization for your VO2 max. That's why Mr. Briggs could stop running for a couple weeks and still go run an 1150 in like 2 weeks, or maybe in 10 weeks. He might not run in 1150, but he's probably going to run faster than most of you guys, okay? But it does steadily decline. You'd see your stroke volume decrease over time. That's the amount of blood that's actually pushed out of the heart. And then increased heart rate with some max exercise. You don't want an increased heart rate because that makes your heart work harder to do the same thing. Adhesions are bad. They're cross links and tissue planes. Adhesions are like around your shoulder capsule. You don't move that shoulder, you're going to have adhesions, and now the shoulder doesn't want to move right or not move at all sometimes. Skin breakdown, bad. We move people all the time. We do range of motion on a near comatose patient so they don't get decubiti ulcers. You guys are medics. You know about decubiti. Oftentimes a killer. Really stinks. Mobilization of 6 weeks takes at least 4 months of remobilization to restore mechanical and structural properties of tissue. This isn't so much a testable point, but a take-home message. It's a bummer when you see people have the deleterious or the negative effects of immobilization, because it takes a lot longer to get that mobilization back in hand than it does to lose it, okay? It takes a lot of work to get mobilization or range of motion back sometimes. So you could put a couple weeks of immobilization in the pot, and we'll have to take several weeks or sometimes months out of the pot to get it back. All right, so types of treatments for restriction of motion. So these are the two you're going to be intimately familiar with. You guys are going to get some party tricks today that are just going to be wicked, okay? I'm going to teach you how to stretch yourselves and your friends and your family like all get out, okay? You guys are going to leave today, and your spider sense is going to be tingling like crazy, okay? You're going to get some really cool stuff. Right, Mr. Zimmer? Like contract, relax?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so range of motion, what we're covering now, and it's very straightforward, and stretching. Joint mobilization is coming. I know you're excited. Purposes of range of motion. Arthrokinematics, normal joint motion. Arthro is joint, kinematics. Remember kinesthetics? Kinematics is motion, so normal joint motion. Prevent adhesions. Bad. They're bad. Remember what George Senior used to say? Bad. It's bad. Joint adhesions, we don't want them. Maintain extensibility of soft tissue. That's right. Nourish articular cartilage. Articular cartilage is that cartilage that's right along your bones. Like you have articular cartilage that's right under your menisci and your knee. If you don't get motion going, it could stave off and die. Bad. Maintain tensile strength of tissues and prevent thrombus. Does anybody know what thrombus? Do we know what that is? Like a DVT? Thrombus is where blood pulls up in your veins. Deep vein thrombosis, and it can clot. And if that clot gets dislodged, it can move up into your lungs, get like a pulmonary emboli or embolism, and then you go to sleep and you wake up dead. So it's not good. So, precautions, contraindications. Do we want to do range of motion if it is disruptive to healing process? No. That's your main contraindication. A lot of times we have a really sick patient in the ICU, and if we try to move their arms and legs, it'll elevate their heart rate to the point of being unsafe. Okay, controlled motion within pain-free range is beneficial. All right, within ranges and speed tolerated by patient. You're going to let the patient be in charge here. If you're doing range of motion and you're not listening to the patient's pain, you are wrong. All right, the patient is going to dictate how much we move them. All right, now there's different types of range of motion. But too much, you get pain and inflammation, and you set them back. When we are doing range of motion with folks, I never heard of the term painful range of motion, okay? I've never heard of it. If you see it in the clinic, it's bad, all right? And just remember that. Not if the patient's response or condition is life-threatening. Like I said, you know, I'm not going to do a whole bunch of range of motion if I know that the patient has a DVT, because technically that DVT can be dislodged, and we will kind of let that get, you know, somewhat controlled, maybe with Coumadin or maybe warfarin or something like that that would decrease that DVT, then we would move them. Yes, please. A DVT is a deep vein thrombosis. Yeah, that's like that pooling of blood, that clot that we can get. The clot's not so bad down in the calf, but if it goes up to the heart, to the lungs, BAD. Okay, so these MI, a myocardial infarction or a CABG, what's CABG? That's a cardiac artery bypass graft, right? I love these abbreviations because I just have to power through them, right? Okay, types of range of motion. Passive. This is what the therapist does. The patient is doing no work, okay? The therapist is doing the work, or a machine, all right? Active assisted range of motion. Now the patient's getting some help. They're doing some of the work, and an external source is doing some work. Like if I use a cane, I'm holding onto the cane. I'm letting my left arm take my right arm for a ride. You're going to do it today in the lab. Active assisted. I'm on a pulley. I can do some. Oh, wait. I'm pulling this way, but my arm's going up. This is hard to do. I'm pulling on the pulley, but it's bringing my arm up. Okay? I can have a therapist help me. I don't really want you to think of a therapist doing active assisted range of motion, because then you're confusing it with passive. But I could get a therapist to help me. I'm doing some of the work, and they're doing some of the work. Is the therapist doing all the work? No, I'm doing some. Active, assisted. And then active range of motion. Active range of motion is when the patient is doing all the work. Okay? Like right now, I'm doing active range of motion. I'm going up as far as I can. I go to where I can tolerate it, and I bring it back down. That's active range of motion for shoulder flexion. All right, sports fans? Okay. Is that rocket science? No! Okay, good. That was for emphasis. Passive range of motion. Take-home message. Joint movement performed and controlled solely by an external force. If you can think of passive range of motion and external force, you're going to hit it out of the park without voluntary muscle contraction by the patient. This is very important for someone who just got surgery. Your rotator cuff muscle just got surgerized. The doctor doesn't want them stressing it because there's two tacks holding it together, but we need to move their shoulder. So I'm going to take this gentleman's shoulder, and I'm going to help him move it. He's not going to move it. I'm going to help him move it to 90 degrees, back and forth, back and forth. I'm doing all the work, and the patient's just hanging out, like thinking this is the life. Overpressure at the end range of motion is characterized as a stretch, not passive range of motion. Okay, now, if you get to the end range, all right, you feel the end range resistance, all right, maybe that person can get to 90 degrees. And I decide to give them overpressure past that end range. That's not passive range of motion, sports fans. That's a stretch. Okay? This is a big mistake that I see a lot of physical therapy technicians make in the clinic. If they do it more than once and I correct them, they're never allowed to touch my patients again. All right? Because if they're pushing my surgerized patient past the end range when they're supposed to be doing passive range of motion, I knew they will break that patient, and I'm not going to let that happen to a patient or to the doctor or to myself. So it's a humongous concept, all right? I love working with PT techs. They're awesome. They do all the work in the clinic. But I hate to fire a tech because they don't understand this concept, all right? I hate to fire techs. Like, there might be four or five techs in the clinic, and I know that my patient is never going to go to that tech because they don't know the difference between passive range of motion and stretching, all right? Do not leave here without understanding passive range of motion versus stretching, because you will fail someone in the clinic. All right. For some reason, there's always that tech that wants to hurt somebody or make them feel a lot of pain after their surgeries. Don't be that person. So, overpressure at the end of range of motion. Is that passive range of motion? That is a stretch. If I ask you to stretch a patient, go stretch him. If I want a passive range of motion, don't stretch him. Are we clear? Okay. That's both a testing point and a take-home life point. Okay, modes of passive range of motion. Believe it or not, you could do it yourself. There's techniques like that. Gravity can help. Here's the big thing here. Provider, typically when you see the therapist moving them, most therapists are lazy. The technicians aren't lazy. But if you see a therapist moving them, it's because they're doing passive range of motion. Mechanical. We have pulleys. This CPM, I do know what CPM stands for. Okay, it's continuous passive motion. Ever see those folks when you're up on the ward? They have their knee in a machine, and the machine's just moving it back and forth. We're set it for 0 to 30 degrees for the first couple hours, then 0 to 40, and that machine's doing all the work. It's beautiful. All right, check it out. Passive range of motion. There are some pulleys. If this gentleman, if that is a gentleman, I hope it is. He's not wearing a shirt. If he can truly, truly relax his arm and let the pulley do all the work, there's that high-speed physical therapy technician with no head. And again, if that person can truly, truly let that left arm move the right and let that right totally relax, that's passive range of motion. Hard to do, but don't be a doubter. Okay, there's that CPM machine. You put that leg in there, you set your parameters, and you just go on for the ride. Wicked. Okay. There's some more CPMs. Indications, typically acute injuries, a lot of inflammation. Patient can't move, active motion's too painful. And it prevents the deleterious effects. Isn't that a great term? Deleterious. Okay. Of immobilization, either after an injury or after surgery. Okay. Whatever our goals, we want to prevent these things, these bad things, contractures, tightness. We want to decrease or inhibit pain. You will not believe how much passive range of motion can help an acute painful syndrome. Okay? I get someone that's really hurting with something, you get a little motion going, and it makes them feel so much better. Because it hurts to move. They come in, they're hurting because they're moving the wrong way. We teach them how to move. Now they can move, and the other way to move doesn't hurt so much. We want to prevent fluid stasis or thrombus formation. It assists with healing, and we really got to keep that patient's awareness for motion. Sometimes we got to decrease their motion because they're doing too much. Sometimes we got to move them more. All right, it does not prevent atrophy of muscles. We do not go into the ward on that comatose patient and move their arms and legs thinking that we're going to keep them strong. All right, we do it to prevent contractures and prevent decubili. All right, it's not going to increase their strength or endurance, and it's not really going to assist in circulation to the extent that an active voluntary contraction does. It will help a little bit with circulation, but not like muscle pumping action. Okay, we got to set it straight real early. Arteries have muscles inside them to push blood. Veins do not. Veins rely on gravity, and they rely on the surrounding musculature to push on the veins to push the blood back to the heart. Very, very simple process. So we need to contract muscles to let those lower extremities push the blood back to the heart. Okay? Really, really important. You see it sometimes in the upper extremities too, but not so much because gravity affects the lower extremities much more. Applications, principles of passive range of motion. It's very important how you handle the patient. You got to get them to relax. And you're going to see all this today. We're going to do a range of motion in stretching lab, but it has to be a smooth and steady pace. We're not going to do it so fast where it hurts them. We want to work within their available range of motion so we don't hurt them. And we're always, always going to monitor the patient's response and modify depending on how they respond. Now, you're going to see the best trick when you're moving people is to watch their face. If their face changes and it looks like they have a lot of apprehension or they're doing this, you're doing it wrong, okay? That really hurt. Active assisted range of motion. Moving on, sports fans. This is voluntary muscular efforts of the patient with assistance of an external force, all right? You're going to have some muscle activation. Now, the patient typically is unable or not allowed to do it all themselves, okay? Maybe we're moving into another stage of healing here, all right? Or maybe they just have better capacity. They have movement within the unrestricted range of motion, and you still can have a manual or mechanical assistance similar to a passive range of motion. I got some help from the patient, and I got help from what other external service or force, okay? We're kind of sharing the load, right? Active assisted range of motion. Does that make sense? Rocket science? No. Okay, so modes, you can do it yourself. You can use that cane. You can use that pulley. Your arm's doing some of the work, and you're letting the pulley do some of the work. A lot of times dictated by pain. Provider, therapist, or technician, family member. I always get family members involved if they can do it well. And then, again, you have those pulleys and household objects. Brooms, mops, the cat, you know, whatever it takes. Okay, indications for active range of motion. Patient is unable or not allowed to do it all themselves. unable to complete the range of motion secondary to weakness. It's okay to initiate general muscle activity. Assist motion through painful arcs or imposed limitations. I tell you, sometimes folks can do only so much. Like, they can get to here actively. Like, their rotator cuff or something else is jacked up. They can only get to here. And because they're so weak or painful, that's all they're doing. And if they just live in here, they're going to get tight. So what we're saying is, you know what? I know it really hurts to do that actively. So I want you to take that cane and 3 times a day for 2 to 3 sets of 10, just move. Because it doesn't hurt for me to do it this way, but I got to get you to do it. Because if you don't, then you're going to get those adhesions and contractures. All right. So the amount of assistance may vary throughout the range of motion. Hand placement is huge and cueing for optimal patient participation. All right. Now you're going to see where I put my hands on you guys on the lab today. I'm not just grabbing your fingertips and doing I'm going to very carefully take the extremity and just take it maybe above and below the joint that I'm trying to move. Or maybe if I'm moving your shoulder, I'm going to get right there, kind of close to the armpit or axillary. You know, it's a big long arm, a lever arm, so maybe I'll hold your hand or your wrist. Maybe if it's a really pretty girl, I'd be inclined to hold her hand. No, I'm only kidding. But no, you hold their hand or their wrist, and you move that arm with very controlled motion. If you don't, it's going to hurt, okay? So we don't want to hurt the patient. So hand placement and cueing is very important. Okay, active range of motion. Okay. Now, do I think you guys know what active range of motion is? I do. I think you guys have a good concept of active range of motion already. If you can move it, it's active range of motion, okay? It's still important to do. A lot of times, folks, they won't get that end range, so I'll ask them, do that last few degrees by yourself, actively. All right, you use your muscles against gravity, or gravity's minimized. Movement with unrestricted range of motion. Indications for active range of motion, lack of range of motion or strength. A lot of times people aren't ready for strengthening yet, or they can't do any type of tubing or weights, so we use active range of motion. Lack of control or stabilization of a joint. Poor muscle control. Move joints above or below an injury. Now, active range of motion does have a place. And a lot of times we use it, but we won't call it active range of motion. Okay? But active range of motion comes in all forms. It's not a huge prescription in physical therapy, because a lot of times when they can do it themselves, it's not something we're harp on. But active range of motion has an important place in strengthening when a person can't really do much more than that. Okay, a lot of times, you know, post-surgery or post-head injury or stroke, active range of motion is the only thing that you can do, and it becomes a very important part of your strengthening program. I don't want to confuse you too much, but active range of motion isn't something you see often in a therapist's prescription, because it's not something you have to work with them, okay? That's why knowing what passive range of motion and active assisted range of motion is probably much more important in the stage of your professional development. Are we tracking? Okay. I would never do that, like, bang the podium thing. That is so not good. Okay. Now, goals that affect active assisted range of motion and active range of motion. They're similar to passive range of motion, but better for increasing blood flow. Okay, now we talked about what doesn't passive range of motion do. All right, but active assisted range of motion and active range of motion, they could do some of these things a little bit. They're better for increasing blood flow. You know, if I'm actively contracting my biceps and triceps here, then I'm pumping on those veins and around those muscles. Muscle strength, active assisted has very little impact here. Muscle re-education, proprioception, kinesthetics, muscle firing, developing motor skills and coordination, bone activity, and active patient participation. So they do have components of passive range of motion, but definitively active range of motion and sometimes active assisted range of motion are better for these components. All right. Prevent contractures, decrease pain, do a lot of the same thing. Maybe stimulate some bone and soft tissue healing. Develop coordination and motor skills. Increase muscle strength when you have less than 3 out of 5. Did you guys do any muscle grading yet? Okay. So, you know, if you can't get above gravity, then you start going some active range of motion. It doesn't make any sense to try to do strengthening with weights if you can't do a 3 out of 5. So a little active range of motion gets them on board. All right. Muscle re-education and maintain muscle elasticity and contractility. Does not maintain or increase strength greater than 3 out of 5, and develop skill or coordination except in movement patterns used. Okay? So, applications of active range of motion. Patient monitor, mostly using mirrors. Okay? We do a lot of cueing. When our hands aren't on them, so we're typically verbally correcting them. We're positioned or minimized to capitalize on the effects of gravity. This isn't something I typically have people lay down on a flat mat to do. I'll have them stand looking in a mirror because we want gravity to be their friend. And we should follow any passive technique, joint mobilization, assisted strength, to reinforce motion gains. So I'm not going to do a whole bunch of passive range of motion in this plane and then ask them to do this if I'm trying to increase this. Okay, so we put all our emphasis in forward flexion. So when we do the active range of motion, we want it to be consistent with the gains that we try to do in passive and active assisted. Okay, good. Range of motion dosage, it depends. It really, really, really has a lot to do with stage of healing, the tissue response to healing. Oftentimes, we know exactly what to do based on what we're finding on the patient's exam. The physiological and the psychological issues with the patient, and ultimately the patient's goals. Okay, depends on purpose. Physiologically, we need to do it about 2 to 3 times a day, 2 to 5 times a day. If we want to maintain arthrokinematics or normal motions, again, 2 to 5 times a day. If we're trying to re-educate, if I'm trying to get somebody to squeeze their shoulder blades back consistently to enhance posture, okay, this is more of a mental feedback loop. Alright, it's more of a cognitive drill, and just doing it 2 to 5 times a day is not going to do. I'm going to make them do it several times a day, okay? More of a postural issue. Re-education. Remember that? Wait, that's a take-home message there. See that? If you want to re-educate, the key to adult learning is repetition, right? I knew that. No specific guidelines for maintenance, okay? Typical dosage. We typically ask folks to do it at least 2 times a day. This is going to be big when you guys are doing your practicals. The FIT principle, frequency, intensity, time, and type. If you don't know how many times or what guidelines to give someone range of motion, you will fail. Okay? Remember that motivator? So you have to know that 1 to 3 sets based on goals. Typically, we make folks do it at least 1 to 3 times, 1 to 3 sets for about 10 repetitions. If you do a higher intensity, typically we do fewer reps. But that's based on their tissue healing and symptoms. All right. Perform complete pain-free range of motion. You respect pain. You touch into the pain to improve motion. Smooth rhythmic motion, approximately 5-second motion. Progress from passive to active assisted to active. Partial to full range of motion. And anatomic planes to combined patterns. So with that saying, you know, the anatomic planes are typically forward flexion, that's a single plane motion, abduction, that's a single plane motion. But as a person progresses, we do more combined patterns. Because we don't move like that. You know, when I go to get my coffee cup every morning, I'm I go in cross patterns, right? Kind of cross body patterns. But if I was doing the robot at Polyesters, I might do that. So you can't discount it. So, I mean, there is some sense to it, but you're going to do both? All right, check this out. There's our FIT principle. All right, so this is telling you exactly how we would do range of motion. Remember I said about 1 to 3 times? The intensity, you're paying attention to the phase of healing. Time, it's smooth. It takes about 5 seconds. 1 to 3 sets of 10. Type, are we doing passive? Are we doing active? Are we doing active assistant? In typical progressions, we typically go from passive to active assisted to active. We might go partial to full. We might progress our reps and then our sets. So nobody says that you have to progress everything at the same time, you know? All right, sequencing. It's typically part of a general warm-up or after a general warm-up. We can arrange easier range of motion stuff to harder. We ask them to do these exercises repetitively. We will monitor them, all right? Some of these things for more sick patients, like their vitals. The color of the segment's sometimes very big with wound healing, but the most important thing that we're monitoring there is pain and improvement, all right? If they're improving, then I know we're doing the right thing. If they're not, or they're getting worse, maybe I could be doing active range of motion when I should be doing passive, and they're not improving at all. So you have to reassess and modify. You document your findings and you reassess whether or not you're doing the right thing. All right? So lab activities today, what we'll show you is some passive and active assistant. So there's some great exercises there. I should save this stuff. There we go. Here's some examples just to kind of give you a segue to the lab today. But here's a heel slide. All right. This is an active active range of motion activity. All right. Now, we cruise through this stuff. Let me see where we're at with the whole schedule.